You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We are talking about the life and times of an awe-inspiring woman. This hour is dedicated to Ida B. Wells. Labeled as radical for speaking out against racism, sexism, and the brutal truth about violence and lynchings of Black Americans, born into slavery in 1862 in Holly Springs, Mississippi, posthumous Pulitzer Prize winner last year. What truths have you found in Ida B. Wells' words? What do you want to know about her writings and speeches, about her publishing and compassion for people who didn't hold power? 800-642-1234. Michelle Duster is a champion of racial and gender equity and has written or contributed to 16 books. Her new one is called Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. And Michelle's great-grandmother is the one and only Ida B. Wells. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, I'm just thinking of you as a young girl looking up at your great-grandmother's portrait hanging in your Chicago home. What did you learn about her when you were growing up?
Well, I learned that my great-grandmother was a trailblazing journalist. She was an anti-lynching crusader, a suffragist, a civil rights icon. She also was a social worker at the end of her career, as well as she founded several organizations, including the NAACP.
But you also knew her as someone who just really lived life on her own terms, and that in your family, she was the matriarch, and yet you were all supposed to just go and do your own thing. What inspired you to look closer at her life?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to write about in Ida B. the Queen was my journey.
Yeah.
As far as I was always interested in telling stories about African American history. I wanted to see myself in the history books and in different public history projects, and especially the media. I didn't see myself in most of the media that I watched when I was growing up. And I wanted to make an impact in that arena. And so I wanted to start with my own family, since my great-grandmother was so well-known. I wanted people to remember her.
Her mother never saw her parents and never saw most of her siblings. She was sold. What impact did that have on Ida B. Wells?
Well, in Ida B. the Queen, I wanted to help people understand the kind of loss that my great-grandmother experienced, and to understand exactly what slavery was. It was an institution that divided families. It was a brutal institution, and Ida was influenced by that because her mother was born in Virginia and sold when she was 7 years old. And she was sold multiple times before she ended up in Holly Springs, Mississippi. Ida grew up learning about that tragedy with her mother and was deeply impacted by that sense of loss, of not knowing where her family was coming from, and seeing her mother agonize on trying to locate her family after the Civil War ended.
Yellow fever hits the family hard. What happened at that moment when Ida B. Wells is 16, off teaching, and she hears of her parents' death?
Well, in Ida B. the Queen, I wanted people to see that Ida B. Wells, my great-grandmother, was visiting her grandmother in the countryside. And then she got word that her parents had been had perished in the yellow fever epidemic. And that's what propelled her to start teaching in order to take care of her five younger siblings.
How did she try to hold them together?
Well, she took a teaching test, which at the time, I mean, this is 1878. Mm-hmm. And there was a great need for teachers because freely, freely enslaved people, there was a high illiteracy rate. And so they were grasping for people to be teachers. And since she was educated, formally educated at what is now Rust College, she just needed to take a teaching exam in order to become a teacher. And she made herself look older and took the exam and was able to get a job in a rural school in Mississippi.
We're talking with author Michelle Duster. Her new book is about her great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells. We're exploring her life and her legacy. How do you think we should talk about to children about this country's history of violence and terrorism against people of color? How do you think that journalists and activists should challenge white supremacy and racism today? What do you see in Ida B. Wells' writing and in her words and actions? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, at the same time Ida is living, there's also immense violence among in America with lynchings. What was happening in our country at the time in regards to white mob violence?
Well, Kate, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I outlined the work that my great-grandmother Ida B. Wells was doing as a journalist. She used journalism as a form of activism in order to expose lynching as a form of domestic terrorism. And she concluded that was the situation after three of her friends were killed for being successful businessmen. And there was a false narrative at the time that black men were violating white women, and she knew they were not guilty of that. So she wanted to expose the truth about the fact that lynching was being used as domestic terrorism and not as a response to crime.
So Thomas Moss, Calvin McDowell, and Will Stewart, victims of lynching, they operated the People's Grocery in Memphis. Can you tell us what happened at the People's Grocery?
Right, Kate. Well, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I outline the fact that these three men were enterprising business owners, and their business rivaled a white-owned business. And the man who owned that business decided to get rid of the competition, and he came up with a scheme on how to do that. And ultimately, these three men were killed. And that just created an outrage in the black community. And my great-grandmother used her platform as a journalist to encourage people to boycott the streetcars, boycott white-owned businesses, and those who could afford to actually leave Memphis.
Did that happen?
Absolutely. It happened. There was a mass exodus from Memphis. Several thousand people left the city, and they went west, mostly west, to Oklahoma, and some went as far as California, in order to gain freedom and democracy in the country that they were born in.
What did your great-grandmother see as the reason for lynchings?
My great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, saw lynching as a form of domestic terrorism, as a form of oppression and intimidation in order to maintain a sort of racial social hierarchy.
We're talking with author Michelle Duster, guiding us through the life and the legacy of her great-grandmother, the matriarch of her family who fought for equality, Ida B. Wells. Which contemporary activists do you admire most in the struggle for social justice? How do you see them fulfilling the legacy of Ida B. Wells, of Frederick Douglass, of Malcolm X, and others? What do you want to know about Ida B. Wells's life and times? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Michelle Duster here on the Ideas Network. We're We're discussing the life and times of journalist and civil rights pioneer Ida B. Wells. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As a Black woman, she fought two battles, racism and sexism, in law, in housing, employment, politics, and her portrait hung on the wall of her great-granddaughter's Chicago home. Michelle Duster writes, a Black woman who refused to be quiet, who held her head high, and who challenged systems in order to make this world a better place. What do you want to know about Ida B. Wells's life? 800-642-1234. The book is called Ida B. the Queen, and author Michelle Duster stays with us. Michelle, explain the bridge, if you will, between Ida B. Wells being a teacher and then becoming a journalist. What was that transition like?
Right, Kate. Well, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I outlined how my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, started her career as a teacher. And for her, as a creative outlet, she started writing for newsletters. She was part of these groups called Lyceums, which were sort of social clubs and literary club. And so she started writing for newsletters, and then she branched out to writing for newspapers, and she ultimately became a newspaper editor and co-owner.
What was the history of African-American newspapers in our country and their role?
Well, shortly after the Civil War ended, or actually before, there was a great interest in African-Americans telling their own story. And in fact, Frederick Douglass founded a newspaper, the North Star. Up until that point, our stories, the experience of African-Americans was pretty much non-existent in what you call it mainstream newspapers.
Yeah, you write about how Ida B. Wells was taking control of the narrative.
Yes, exactly. Because the narrative about African-Americans at that time was that they were unsophisticated, uneducated, bestial race. It was very negative. So, and she knew that wasn't true. So she wanted to take control of the narrative and actually tell the truth about Black people.
As she wrote about condemning the lynchings in Memphis, that cost her the Memphis newspaper she ran. What happened there?
Well, Kate, in Ida B. the Queen, I outline how my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, lost her printing press when she kept telling the truth about what was going on regarding lynching, that it was not used as a form of punishment for crime, but it was used as domestic terrorism to oppress African-American community. And as a result of her outspokenness, her printing press was destroyed and her life was threatened.
What did she do? What did she do after her paper in Memphis was destroyed?
Well, she actually was out of town when that happened, and so she just never went back.
Mm. What was her next step? Because she also was publishing a pamphlet, Southern Whores.
Right. Well, my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, was in Philadelphia when her printing press was destroyed, and she went to New York City, not knowing that that she had that loss, and she was informed once she got there. And she met T. Thomas Fortune when she was in New York, and he offered her the opportunity to write for the New York Age, which he was the co-owner of that newspaper. She wrote a series of columns in that newspaper about the horrors of lynching and the realities of lynching, and created the pamphlet Southern Horrors out of those newspaper articles.
Was she paid for her work? Was she paid for her journalism?
For a good portion of the beginning of her career, she was not paid. She was paid with copies of the newspaper, which is what, you know, is still common today.
Yeah.
You know, with writing.
Yeah, and not being paid for the words. What effect did her journalism, do you think, have on journalism as a whole in African-American culture?
Well, my great-grandmother Ida B. Wells was a pioneer in what is now called data journalism. She's being credited as the first who collected names, dates, locations, and circumstances of lynchings in order to create a database almost of all of the atrocities that were occurring. And she used that information to basically build a case for the public opinion.
How was it received as she was building this case against lynchings?
Well, I think it became fairly effective because Frederick Douglass himself said that before her writings, he had no idea how extensive the situation was and how brutal things were. He also credited her with helping him understand that lynching was being used as a form of domestic terrorism, because before her writings and her chronicling in excruciating detail what was happening, he actually believed some of the narrative, the other narrative.
How much information was she able to glean from white-owned newspapers and the statistics and that storyline on lynchings?
Well, my great-grandmother Ida B. Wells was actually genius when it came to excerpting information from other sources in order to indict them. So to me, it's almost like if somebody today captures as a screenshot of somebody's tweet and then says, well, this person said that, and they show the tweet. So then the person can't deny it.
Yeah. So it was like she was almost, you know, going around gathering proof. She was gathering evidence.
Yes, she was gathering evidence of what people said themselves. So she wasn't saying this person said that. She was saying this person said that, and here's the evidence of what they said. This is their own words. And she was masterful at that because there couldn't be an argument against it because she had the evidence that they really did say it. Or this really did happen.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Michelle Duster, who is an educator, writer, and activist, and her latest book is about her great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells. You can join in. What do you want to know about the journalist, Ida B. Wells? How do you think her legacy resonates among activists today? Join in at 800-642-1234. Michelle, Ida B. Wells eventually settles in Chicago. What did she do in Chicago?
One of the things I wanted people to get from Ida B. the Queen is my great-grandmother's journey from, you know, being born into slavery into becoming a world leader. And she came to Chicago at the request, actually, of Frederick Douglass. Originally, she came to write and publish a pamphlet that was protesting the World's Fair, the exclusion of African Americans from the World's Fair. And she eventually settled in 1895 when she got married to Ferdinand Barnett.
What was their relationship like?
Well, Ferdinand Barnett and my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells Barnett, were my grandmother's parents. And so I grew up knowing that my great-grandfather was a feminist. He was very progressive, and he and my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, worked very well together as a team. They were both civil rights activists, and they complemented each other quite a bit in the way that they worked together.
What was his line of work? What did he do?
He was an attorney, and he also owned a newspaper called The Conservator. He had his own law firm, and he actually was an assistant state's attorney for the state of Illinois for about 12 years.
Ida B. Wells also helped found the NAACP in the early 1900s. What was that like for her?
Okay, well, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I explain how my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, was a founder of the NAACP, which was founded in response to a riot that took place in Springfield, Illinois in 1908. So a group of people from around the country formed the NAACP in 1909. She, my great-grandmother, was enthusiastic at first, but then found that the strategies that the organization wanted to implement were not in alignment with her way of working.
Yeah, what were those shortcomings like? What didn't she agree with?
My great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, was an action-oriented person, and she was very uncompromising and very strong, had very strong opinions. She was an in-your-face kind of person. She found the NAACP at that time to be more focused on studying the problem than she was comfortable with.
We're talking with author Michelle Duster about the legacy of Ida B. Wells. What are the biggest challenges to overcoming racism and sexism today? What direction are we moving? How do you think journalists and activists should challenge racism today? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Michelle Duster after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on the life and times of Ida B. Wells. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In 1862, she was born into slavery in Holly Springs, Mississippi. During Reconstruction, Ida's mother attended school with her for a time to gain literacy skills. Ida's father was proud his daughter could read and encouraged her to read the newspaper to him. Her driving force in life, Michelle Duster writes, that Ida deserved to enjoy all of the opportunities and freedoms that were the promise of our nation. What is the driving force behind your activism and protesting systemic racism and police brutality? How do you view Ida's work today? Be part of this hour, 800-642-1234. And Michelle Duster stays with us. Let's bring in a call now. Neely is with us from Appleton. Hi, Neely.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
So I was just wondering, Michelle, you know, when we are growing up, we hear stories about our great-grandparents, and I'm just wondering what one of your favorite stories is about your great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells.
Well, one of the things that I outlined in Ida B. the Queen, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, is a story about how my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, confronted a minister in Vicksburg, Mississippi, when she heard that he was spreading rumors that negatively impacted her reputation. And she confronted him, demanding an apology, and she wrote the apology for him and asked him to give the apology in public. And that is just so amazing to me that she was such a confrontational, in-your-face person, like, you know, and nip things in the bud. So that to me shows her personality.
How much did you understand about her through her journal? Did she write about these things in her journal?
Yes, in order to write the book, Ida B. the Queen, I read through my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells' journal, and her autobiography, as well as a lot of other primary documents. And in her journal, which she wrote when she was in her mid-20s, she did chronicle different experiences that she had, personal experiences that she had while she was living in Memphis.
How did she feel about herself? What was her own self-esteem? Outwardly, you know, she showed no fear. What was she like inwardly?
Well, reading through her journal when I was researching Ida B. the Queen, one of the things that struck me about her is she had a conflict between what the expectations were for women at that time versus how she naturally was. Her personality was very direct. She was very opinionated, very outspoken, and women were discouraged from being that way.
How did she like to dress?
My great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, definitely liked fashion. In her journal, she talked about how she lusted after certain clothing, and she went to fabric shops and wanted to have certain dresses made, and she wanted to have matching parasols and a hat. And she actually would do what today is called put things on layaway.
Yeah.
Where she would pay in installments for these outfits.
What was it about that? You know, why did she want to dress so nicely?
I mean, my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, clearly, based on her journal, really cared about how she looked. She took great pride in, well, she was a teacher. And even as a teacher, she had to, you know, present herself in a certain way. She was part of a small middle class in Memphis. And then the expectations that there were for women in general, and then Black women specifically, she had to present herself as in a certain ladylike way in order to avoid harassment.
Let's bring in Eileen now, joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Eileen. What would you like to add?
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to appreciate Ms. Duster for the work on her great-grandmother, and I look forward to getting her book. I would say that the legacy of Ida B. Wells can be exhibited in the protest for social justice that took place this summer in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. I mean, there we had an example of a modern-day lynching, and I'm sure that thousands of people recalled that Ida B. Wells alerted us to the dangers of lynching in the 19th century and early 20th century. So I'm just so grateful that you're having this show. Thank you.
Eileen, thank you. What do you think Ida B. Wells would have made of this past year, a year of huge protests over racial justice, over police brutality, Black Lives Matter?
One of the things I outlined in Ida B. the Queen is the connection between the work that my great-grandmother did and what is happening today, as well as everything that happened in between and before her. I chronicled the 400 years of Black resistance in this country from 1619 to 2020. And so the work that my great-grandmother did and the times that she lived in are unfortunately a little, there's a little bit of a parallel between what we're dealing with now and what she was living through. The way I think about it is that the play is the same, but the actors and the set design and the costumes are different.
Yeah, and you know, your book draws connections from your great-grandmother to Black Americans who have continued the struggle for social justice. And you have Colin Kaepernick in there, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, Stacey Abrams, Shirley Chisholm. The list goes on. Why did you want to trace these threads?
Well, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I wanted to tell not only my great-grandmother's story, her life and legacy, which my hope is that people will be incredibly inspired by her courage and the extraordinary amount of work that she did for racial justice and gender equity. But I also thought it was important for people to understand that the struggle continues and where my great-grandmother got her strength from, because people came before her. And so you can see a continuum, a 400-year continuum of Black resistance and progress.
On this continuum marked by the first Black woman elected vice president of the U.S., what would she say?
Well, the inauguration of Kamala Harris was an amazing experience for me to watch. Just thinking about the fact that my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, did not have the right to vote until she was 58 years old. Mm. She was very involved in the suffrage movement. In the suffrage movement, she participated in the march in 1913 and was asked to march in the back of the parade. Black women were asked to march in the back of the parade. So in this movement for women's rights, Black women were basically disrespected. So to have a Black and South Asian woman be inaugurated into the vice president, that would be a really proud moment, I think, for my great-grandmother.
Talking with author Michelle Duster, we're exploring the life and legacy of Ida B. Wells, taking your questions about her life as a journalist, about a suffragist, about helping people and making them understand what lynching was like in America. Join in 800-642-1234. Tyrone is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Tyrone. What would you like to say?
Good morning. Good morning, dear heart. Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to the young Miss Duster, the Ida Wells granddaughter. I just wanted to say a wonderful Black History Month to all. And as we're standing on the shoulders of Philando Castile, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, we've lost two icons, Hank Aarons, Cicely Tyson. And, you know, there's a lot we need to be grateful and thankful for. So I'm going to buy the book. I hope I can get over up to the Chicago line, the border line there between Wisconsin and Illinois there, and get an autograph from you. So I'm just honored to be on the phone with her. Not necessarily any questions, but it does my heart real good to know that I'm in her presence, you know, because at 62, I've read some materials over the years there. I've been out of school for some years now at the age of 62, but it does my heart, especially, you know, like I said, with Breonna Taylor, Philando Castile, George Floyd in heart, you know, losing Cicely Tyson and Hank Aarons and, you know, Don Cheney of Temple University. You know, I mean, we've come so far, but we got a long way to go.
And Tyrone, thank you. Yes, yeah. And Michelle Duster, I want to also bring up the Pulitzer Prize here last year, the posthumous Pulitzer Prize. What did that mean to Ida B. Wells and the family?
Right. Well, my great grandmother, Ida B. Wells, was awarded a posthumous Pulitzer Prize special citation for the work that she did chronicling lynching. And I mean, that was a proud moment for our family. My great grandmother was well known while she was alive, but she didn't get the credit that she deserved during that time. Although she, within the Black community, she was very well known. But in the larger community, she was vilified and actually, you know, received death threats for her work. So she was not popular among certain people in communities. So for her work to be recognized now has a lot of meaning.
Yeah. What do you think is the awakening here? Why are we seeing her work now?
I think the convergence of the centennial of the 19th Amendment in 2020, plus the questioning of journalism and the integrity of journalism, combined with the questioning of monuments and representation of women, and who does this country celebrate? All of that happened around the same time, and I think it begs the question, like, here was this woman, my great grandmother Ida B. Wells, who contributed so much to this country, and people were lifting her up.
We're talking with Michelle Duster, a public historian on projects that highlight women and African Americans, including her great grandmother Ida B. Wells. Which contemporary activists do you admire most in the struggle for social justice and equal rights? How do you see them fulfilling the legacy of Ida B. Wells or Frederick Douglass, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr.? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Michelle Duster here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Michelle Duster. Her new book is a portrait of her great grandmother, Ida B. Wells, who was an investigative journalist of lynchings in America and a civil rights activist. Michelle writes, as she pioneered what is now called data journalism, collecting information from a wide body of sources and scouring white-owned newspapers for statistics to convey the lynching problem in America. She died in 1931 during the height of the Great Depression, and she received a posthumous Pulitzer Prize last year. When you were a kid, you were your dad would take you to on a drive to see the Ida B. Wells homes. This was a public housing development. What do you remember about that development and what he told you?
Right, Kate. Well, in my book, Ida B. the Queen, I did recount how my father would drive me past the Ida B. Wells homes. It was in a different neighborhood than we lived in. And what struck me was how massive it was. It was a series of buildings that had over 1,600 units on there. So it was a substantial housing community. And for our family, it was a huge honor to have her name connected to that building, the buildings, and the fact that it was named after her because of grassroots activism that advocated for it to be named after her.
Let's bring in Jennifer now in Cassville. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really excited about this book. I think it's something that a lot of high school kids should read. English teachers could promote this. But my question is this. You know, today, Congresswoman AOC is getting a lot of threats and death threats, and she actually has a good posse of followers that help her, navigate this, what I call a cruel highway. And I wonder, is there evidence that Ida B. Wells had such a posse that helped her, thwart these threats?
Who was her security? I think Jennifer is asking there.
That's a great question. And one of my goals in Ida B. the Queen was to show that there was a community of activists. A lot of them knew each other. My great-grandmother interacted with Frederick Douglass, who served as a mentor to her. She worked with T. Thomas Fortune, William Monroe Trotter, W.E.B. Du Bois. It's almost like a who's who list of, of Black historic figures, but they did know each other and they worked together. They went to conventions together and meetings. And so there was a sense of camaraderie and support among each other.
When she traveled to speaking engagements or she was traveling around the country, sometimes to the UK as well abroad, did she travel alone?
Most of the time she actually did. When she went to a couple of meetings in Washington, D.C. after she was married, she traveled with her infant child. And so in that situation, there was a nurse with her. But most of the time she was alone.
When the housing development was taken down, demolished in 2011, what happened to that area and how it is today?
So in that, where the Ida B. Wells homes were eliminated, there right now that land is empty. Except for there's a grocery store on part of the land and there's mixed income housing on part of it. But there's a section of it that is undeveloped. And I actually, hope I've worked to make it so people will remember that there was a home, a substantial community there before whatever is going to be developed on that land.
I understand you're working on establishing a monument to her where that development used to be. What is the status of the project?
The status is that it should be installed this year, finally. and that's one of the things I wanted to outline in Ida B. the Queen was all of the different projects that have been done and are in progress to help people remember the life and legacy of my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells.
Yeah, what are the other monuments to Wells like and where are they?
Well, there's a museum in Holly Springs, Mississippi, which is actually a house museum that was formerly owned by the person who enslaved her parents. So that's poetic justice. And there are a couple of initiatives that are happening in Memphis and Washington, D.C., and then in Chicago, there are a couple of projects that are underway. So there's great interest in her for different reasons. Some are honoring her as a suffragist. Last year, with the centennial of the 19th Amendment, there was a lot of focus on Black women's contribution to the suffrage movement.
We're talking with Michelle Duster, who is a writer, an activist, educator, and her new book about her great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Michelle, there's been a good amount of debate in recent years over monuments of Confederate leaders with calls for them to be removed from public spaces. What do you think these monuments say about us as a nation?
I think monuments reflect the values of a country, of a nation. And right now, the way things are, the monuments do not reflect accurately the history of this country.
What would you hope that a monument to your great-grandmother would accomplish?
A monument to my great-grandmother in Chicago would be the first monument to an African-American woman in the city of Chicago. So that would create visibility and representation of one Black woman. And I think there needs to be more than one.
Yeah, who are the Ida B. Wells today? Who is carrying on her torch?
Well, what I outlined in my book, Ida B. the Queen, was the numerous people who are carrying on the torch in various areas that she worked in. She was so multidimensional that I needed to include multiple people who are working in different areas. And my hope is that a new generation will be inspired by the work of my great-grandmother and feel they have a voice and their initiatives can carry us forward as well.
Do you have her portrait up in your own home?
I have several images of her. I have actually a little bust.
What do you like about looking at it? What do you think of when you look at it?
I am in awe of the fact that she managed to navigate a world that did not welcome African-Americans or women, and she was both. And so she had two different fights to contend with, and she faced it head on and fought with everything she had in order for me, three generations later, to have the opportunities I have.
And she, even at the end of her life, ran for Congress.
Right. She actually ran for state senate in Illinois in 1930. She lost by a landslide, but to me, she won because she had the guts to get in the race.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about her history.
Thank you, Kate, for having me.
Michelle Duster is a writer, educator, and advocate for racial and gender equality. Her new book is called Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells, about her great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.